Hospitalitychain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, Hospitalitychain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Fell Into Food podcast. I am your host, Chef Jeff Fell. This week's going to be a little bit different. We're going solo. That's right. Me, myself, and I didn't know what to do. I wanted to try something different. I've never done a solo one and thought it'd be really fun to do. And I sat around figuring out what do I do it on? Is it on AI? Is it on what the upcoming trends are? And I realized I never really have told my story about how I fully got into the industry, how I've worked through it, the lessons that I've learned, some divine intervention, as I call it. And I want to take that time on this episode to kind of do that, to give people that full journey. Again, I've talked about it bits and pieces on other shows and even with our own here, but never that full depth journey that I've been on from starting when I was a kid all the way to where we are today, sitting here recording right now. So I'm going to jump right into it. The goal I want to do is to, I don't want it to be boring, but I want to give some lessons learned throughout that I've found. And hopefully those will resonate with those listening. And maybe you can take a piece of this with you. And it's not just, I don't know what I'm doing today. We're just going to knock this out. So let's start. I grew up in a tiny little farm town in the middle of nowhere, like legit middle of nowhere, cornfield, plopped house in the middle of a cornfield. That's where I grew up. And it was that farmer life. It was you worked hard, you worked for what you had. And a lot of the things that we did around the farm, you didn't know you were working. You'd sit in the back of a 2-ton truck or inside of a grain silage bin, and you'd help push corn or beans down or scoop it out of the truck. You didn't know you were really working, but you were. So you learned hard work, ethics from a very early age. I know that as soon as I could drive, I know my father set me up on it was a VW Rabbit car, and I had to learn stick shift. I think he literally put some books under my butt and I had to learn how to start driving stick. He gave me the quick course run, but I was in that driveway trying to figure out how to run stick because I needed to be able to pull the trailer to put the mower on. That's what I used to mow my grandfather's yard, my great aunt's yard, and our yard. And that's where I started getting my first bit of income is doing that. So I learned at an early age how to drive a stick shift and use that to my advantage, and then started actually mowing yards. And that was my first little bit of income when I was younger. I did get a job pretty quickly, 15, when I started the gas station. Country Junction, shout out to the old OG Country Junction in Kansas, Illinois, not the state, Illinois. So I worked there. My best friend's parents owned it. We ran the cashier. We were in the back. There was a little broaster type chicken and pizza, a full deli that we had, making sandwiches. That was my first introduction to food. I didn't realize it until I look back now that I learned some basics of food safety. It was a weird dynamic because it wasn't really a kitchen, but I was around food quite a bit. So I did that all through high school. And, you know, what I really learned from that job, again, from 15 to 18 before I moved to the town over or a couple towns over, was that be the best at who you are. And in a job, you show up. I was a gas station attendant. I took out trash. I swept the floor. I rang up on a register every once in a while, pull candy forward, things like that. And then when I worked in the deli space, making pizzas, very simple Hunt Brother stuff with putting toppings on, but you still had orders coming in, etc. Be the best damn gas station attendant you could be. Don't slouch it. Don't relax. Like, I wanted the floors to be perfect. I wanted to be squeaky clean. So when the next person that came in the next day, it was perfect for them and they could start their day out right. So I feel like it was a great way to be on time, get those repetitions in of just being good at whatever your craft is. you know, from there, I then moved to Charleston. Again, it was two towns over. It's where Eastern was. I went to, started college at Eastern with a major in geology. If you don't know, I wanted to be a paleontologist. I absolutely love dinosaurs. I still love them to this day. What better way than to start with geology? That's kind of the premise. You got to go 4 years, then you'd go off and do your master's. I had this whole master plan that I was going to go to the Black Hills and I believe North Dakota and do my master's and eventually my doctorate and dig up dinosaur bones. Literally what you see on Jurassic Park, sweeping the dust off of the bones. That's what I wanted to do until I hit about year two and I took the structure of minerals. I believe that's what it was. This class was incredibly hard and it wasn't for me. I said, if this is what I have to go through to become a paleontologist, I don't want to do this. So I stopped going to class and ultimately just dropped out. I said, I need money. What do I do? So I got a job at Home Depot. One of my buddies said, hey, they're hiring cashiers. I said, hey, I don't care. I need money. So I was a cashier. Nothing crazy. Just went out with my friends. Was a cashier. However, right across from the cashier station was the hardware section. It was fascinating. I'd hear guys talk about tools and the different things, and they'd always ask me, and I'm like, sorry, I don't know really much about these tools. Let me find an associate for you. Started talking to those associates, and they started to teach me about that, all the different things that contractors were looking for and the different tools that were there and why you pick this brand versus that brand. So I talked to one of the assistant managers. I said, man, I'd really like a chance to go work in hardware. And he's like, you would? And I said, yeah, that sounds like a pretty cool thing to do. So one day a week, couple days a week, I'd go and work in the hardware section. Picked up, absorbed as much knowledge as I could. Had no experience in that. And right next to hardware is paint. So I wanted to learn paint. So I started to learn that. And then there was doors and windows behind that department. Little by little, I started to learn all the different sections of the hardware store. And what it allowed me to do was, because I was able to gain a lot more skills, I was able to open more doors for myself in the matter of a couple years. You know, I was a millwork specialist. I ended up working in garden just because I wanted to be full-time. So I said, hey, I'll do it. That was backbreaking work, moving rocks and retainer wall. So much work to do that. But it got me a full-time position because before I was part-time. And before you know it, I was an expediter or dealing with installers and delivery and the actual carpeting and things that came in from the manufacturers. That was pretty cool. And then I took over a supervisor role running the customer service desk. Now that was, you want to talk about the ultimate patience when people are coming in yelling and screaming at you because their orders were wrong or something was messed up and you have to kind of be that front person to deal with it. Taught me patience, a lot of patience. And really that if you just take a little bit of time to listen to somebody and let them get that out, really deep down, it's not as big of an issue as it is, but we have a tendency to fight back. We want to instantly say, oh, you know, you're wrong. We didn't do anything wrong. And that's when it's just sheer chaos. So many times customers come in and really they just wanted someone to hear them out, listen to their full story, and figure out a solution together. And that's what's ultimately what we did. You know, so again, the big lesson with my time at Home Depot was learn as many skills as you can because it makes you worth a lot more. That's night and day, any industry. I think the more you know, the better off position you are. So I did that. And then I hit my mid-20s, and I said, I can't do this. Good gig, Monday through Friday, decent hours. That was all fine and dandy, but it was the same thing over and over. Go out on the weekends, hang out with friends. I said, there's got to be more to life than just this. And I said, what do I want to do? What do I want to do with the rest of my life? And I sat there and contemplated day after day, what would make me happy? What would I do to be more fulfilled? And ultimately, I landed on food. I said, I love cooking for my roommate. I loved being around my great-grandmother and the time that I had eating at her house and the simple meals that she made. I said, you know what? I think I could cook for the rest of my life. So what did I do? I needed enough money. I started exploring what schools up around Chicago because it was the closest, you know, suburb with decent schools. Went around a bunch of schools. Some of them were too expensive. Ultimately, I was like, you know what? JJC. Joliet Junior College. I can get in there. I've got all my prereqs done from Eastern. Really, all I got to do is the cooking piece. But there was one big issue is I didn't save up any money. I was really dumb, hadn't saved money, would spend any bit of money I had, you know, paid the bills. And that was it. I didn't have a lot of extra money. I was lucky to have $200 extra in my bank account. I needed $600 to get up there. Divine intervention, as I believe, one of my buddies, his mom actually needed help moving some stuff as she was moving to another city. I needed $600. And ironically, she says, I can pay you $600. She paid me the money. That was enough to get me my studio apartment, enough to get me up there and transferred from one Home Depot to another to at least keep working. Applied to JJC, got in. And that was simple enough. Started taking the cooking classes. It was a big eye-opening learning lesson for me, for somebody who had never been in the industry. To hear guys talk about, you know, they started at 15, they've been around the kitchen, they've been, you know, in that environment, that culture. Not me. Nothing at all. Retail, farm life, that's all I knew. I got humbled real quick trying to figure out how this worked. But what was instilled was that hard work, that ethic of just keep trying, keep going. Don't stop. So I did that. I don't know. It was about halfway through because it was a 2-year program. Some chef said, you know, you really need to get a job in the industry if you want to make it. If you don't, you're not going to, it's going to be much more difficult to make it. Okay. So I started applying everywhere. You name it. I put my application out, heard from nobody. Rightfully so. Who wants some 24, 25 year old that has no kitchen experience and they're applying for a position? Because I really didn't want to be a dishwasher or anything else. Got lucky. JJC had a career fair. The casino was there, Harris Casino, that was in town. I said, hey, we're opening a buffet. We need a bunch of cooks. Put my name in the hat. Awesome. Let me see if I can get a job there. Didn't hear anything and was like, well, there's another one. So I'm just going to keep grinding, go to work at Home Depot, go to school. Eventually I'll figure this out. Get a random call from an HR lady. I don't know who it was. And she's like, we're opening the buffet and we need people. You know, you had signed up. Would you like to do an interview? Yes, absolutely. Let's do it. Not knowing you have to go through like 4 or 5 interviews at a casino in order to get a position. It was the most rigorous thing ever for a cook position. It was like the initial interview with HR. Then you went in and you did like a quick written test. You had to talk to the room chef or the property chef. You then had to do a panel interview, which was the craziest thing because they wanted like outgoing people, even if you were in the back of the house. So I was like, what was I doing? Peyton Manning, I think they had said, pick your favorite celebrity or famous person. And you had to like reenact and people had to guess. So I was sitting there in front of a panel of all these execs, plus all the other people who were interviewing for car dealer or dishwasher. It didn't matter. You had to go through it. Got through that step. And then there was like one more interview and I don't even remember what that was. Ultimately landed the gig. So, okay, boom. I'm in a kitchen and I'm going to start learning everything that I can. I was able to go into the upscale American restaurant right out the gate as they were finishing the buffet. What did this teach me? A whole lot of organizational skills and that a real kitchen is fast and it is furious. Really funny story. And those that if you're listening and we worked together back in the day, you know, day one in the kitchen, I whacked off a good chunk of my finger. And the sous chef came up to me and said, what's going on? What happened? Because I went straight to the first aid kit, wrapped that thing up as tight as I could. I mean, it looked like a club on my finger. I said, oh, I opened something up from culinary school. Not a big deal, even though it was from cutting some room temp calamari, you know, slishing, sloshing around. But I wanted to go fast and I wanted to be awesome. Knives had just been replaced with freshly new sharpened knives. And I worked that night. Hurt like living hell. It was terrible. And I kept that bandage on my finger for a good 2 weeks. Probably should have went to the hospital. Never did. Was scared of like insurance and like what's covered, what's not covered. I'm going to get fired because I cut myself the first day. Made it through that and was a lot more careful with the knife and used the cutting glove that they said to put on. And I didn't have it on. I was like, oh, I'm a badass. I go to school. I don't need a cutting glove. Listen, if you're doing some of that stuff, cutting glove is not a bad thing. So eventually the buffet opens. I had gone through the ringer at that upscale kitchen. So when I got moved over, it was a hybrid kitchen. It was buffet, but there was also an a la carte line. I luckily, because I was one of the few that wanted the a la carte positions, I was able to actually work a la carte. So it was a mix, you know, out front and a la carte. And eventually a bunch of people had started to leave. So it was very easy then to just stay more, mostly a la carte in the back. But the line was not set up for a la carte. It was this massive buffet kitchen that had been revamped into a line. Salads was all the way at one end. Saute was at the other end. Grill was at the other end. Long story short, learned how to cook really fast, really good. That was awesome. Got exposure to buffet, high volume. I'll never forget the day that they said, hey, we have one of our mass production cooks going on vacation and we need someone to step in. I said, yeah, absolutely. So a cook by the name of Angel took me under his wing, showed me every tip and trick on how to mass produce for like 1,000 people on a given day and do it very effective and efficiently. Never forget those lessons that I learned from how to have multiple piece equipment going, double steamer, 2 steam kettles, you know, for thawing ribs, you throw in hundreds and hundreds of pounds and just let the water go and get all those done. Lots of tips and tricks. So I learned bulk production. So I'd bounce around a la carte line, bulk production, buffet line if it needed help. Ultimately, I became what's called a dual rate sous chef. So essentially, if a chef leaves the kitchen, you now are in charge. So it's kind of a weird dichotomy. One minute you're cooking next to your fellow cooks. Next minute you'd walk across the line and there's a time card. You'd swipe your card and you're in charge. So it's a very weird dichotomy because now you have to tell people what to do. But it's kind of like a learning step to like get you to the next level, being in charge of the kitchen. So a lot of people started to leave. The kitchen got harder and harder. More work because you had the same amount of people to feed every day. I just started getting frustrated. And I'll never forget, there was a time when I burned. I had 3 tilt skillets going and I was making some sort of cream base. I don't know what it was for. And I scorched one of the batches. And then we're talking 40 gallons of product. I got pulled down, got written up. I was fucking furious. I said, how dare you write me up? I do so much work around here. And I'll never forget it. And now I look back and it was fantastic what Chef Joe had said. He said, you know, no one's going to be, you know, as smart as you. No one's going to work like you. No one's going to be as organized as you. No one is going to be you. And you need to realize that nobody may work at the level that you work at. That was a hard pill to swallow. I'd never been written up. I'd never been in trouble for a job. I was pissed. I was like, I can't believe it. You know, he's like, you burned this product because you're working too fast. You're trying to get too many things done. So I took it. You know, it was a little bit and eventually I got over it. It really wasn't as big of a deal as it was. But looking back at that operation, when you burn 40 gallons of product, that's a lot of money that somebody else is paying for. That's a corporation. I didn't think of it in that way. I just thought, you know, I made a mistake and I shouldn't get written up. So, you know, things are going along. We're almost it's a little over a year into it, maybe getting close to a year and a half. And a full-blown sous chef position opened up. So you go from dual rate to an actual like sous chef. So every time you clock in, you're in charge. And I remember talking to the property chef and he said, you know, you have to be in this type of position for like 10 years because running an establishment like this is like running a restaurant in the real world. So you need at least 10 years experience. At this point, I'm 26, 27, somewhere in that ballpark. And it just, again, that pissed me off. I hate when people tell me you can't do something that you need to, just put limitations that you have a limitation. So I came in, did what I needed to do, close opens, worked my ass off. You know, at that point I was coming in, working at Home Depot in the mornings, going to school and then going to work at the casino. I was like, at my wit's end. I ultimately had dropped the depot. I don't know, a few months after doing all three because it was just too much. I was just doing too much work and trying to do all that work. I got burnt out. It was just me, nobody else, no significant other, no kids. I was burnt. Well, one of my room chefs had actually went to another gig and heard he was looking for people. One of the other chefs is like, hey, they're looking for people. They could tell I wasn't happy. So I called him up and he's like, yeah, you know, we're looking at people up here at Loyola University. So I said, okay, I'm going to go see what he has to offer. Went up, did an interview. You know, he took me around campus. I talked with the property chef. Property chef's like, oh, he'd make a great lead cook. And I was like, I'm not a lead cook. You know, I want some sort of management position. Well, ipso facto, I got hired on for a front of house position. So as I'm transitioning, I guess the big lesson at the casino was that you're not all that in a bag of potato chips, that you need to humble yourself a little bit because you don't know what you don't know. And especially when people have been in the industry a lot longer than you. So it was really shut your mouth and get the job done and work hard. That was probably the biggest takeaway from the casino. So now, okay, fast forward, get into Loyola University and I'm in a front of house position. Now I'm in dress shirts, ties, dress pants. It's a union account as well. I should mention that because that is a big, big piece of the story because you have to treat union folks differently. There's a CBA. You can't just do whatever you want. It's not a regular kitchen. I do the front of house thing. I get yelled at so many times for jumping in and helping because we're short staffed, staying till 1 o'clock in the morning because I did like the evening shift after it closed, getting everything cleaned. I mean, when you're pushing through 4,000 meals a day, I mean, dinner service is probably like 1,500, 2,000, my guess. And you're down dishwashers. I don't want to be there till 2 o'clock in the morning because I have one guy to wash my dishes. So I jump in and I got yelled at all the time by the DM at that time saying, you know, you can't do work and we view not do. I think that was the saying, we view not do. It just wasn't in my blood. If so facto, about 3 months go by, a chef position opens up across campus. I put my name in the hat. And because I knew, I think at the time he was the residential senior director. So he oversaw all the residential halls. Put my name in the hat. And one of the other chefs, you know, had talked to him a lot. He was a younger guy as well. And did an interview and said, you know, ultimately I got it. I know what the hell I got myself into. I just knew that I wanted to run a kitchen or I wanted to be back house. I was tired of being in the soup. So got my first kitchen. I was 28. And the amount of work that went into that was astronomical. But it was something new. It was different. I was excited. But man, did it put me through the ringer. I learned really quick that culture can make or break a kitchen. We had to get rid of so many people. And it was the hardest thing to do because now you're down people. You have to figure out how and when you can jump in, especially in a union environment, because you don't want to get in trouble and you don't want to have to end up costing the company more money. So we just weeded people out. We jumped in, training opportunities, short, we talked about culture. We're bringing in the right people. I had Bill, you know, the residential senior director. He was showing me the systems and how to work things. And I stumbled upon the system, their .NET. It was like the full brain system of the company. And I learned really quick that a lot of the systems that I was looking for were already done. All I had to do was tap into them, make some tweaks and adjustments, and it made things a lot easier. So year was really tough. Year one was really hard. We got the team in place. Things are humming. Become super efficient, learn all these systems and products, kind of get my kitchen down to what it needs to be. The staff's happy. I'm learning how to lead large teams. I think I had 40 people in that kitchen, around that 40, 42. Learning how to lead those people. Organization systems. That's the lesson from that kitchen. You have to be organized. You got to have everything together. When your ordering schedule was, I had a whiteboard up every day and I wrote the same things, everything that needed to get done every day until it became fully like background. I know what I have to do, but I wrote it down for a year straight with tweak, edit, short-term, mid-term, long-term goals, getting it spelled out so that way I knew what I needed to do every single day. There, you know, alarms on my phone going off. You need to place your order. You need to do this. You need to do that. Go check on this. Check service, check food, check signage, everything. Got the systems in place. With systems, life is easy. It's hard getting up to those systems, but once you have systems in place, it is so much easier. And I kept that if you can build a system, you can be in any size. It doesn't matter. And we'll get to that later on when I start going to other universities. If so facto, the other kid, there's another kitchen across literally an alleyway. So it's not very, literally, I don't know, 25 feet, maybe back door to back door. So you'd come and borrow products all the time, do transfers, et cetera. Staff sometimes would help out from building to building. So you build a repertoire, you know, the people in the other building. We'll come to find out. I come in one day and one of the chef that was running that building at the time just was gone. Like she wasn't there. Didn't know what happened. I call up my food service director, Ron. Shout out to Ron. Love that guy. And I was like, she's not here. And he goes, all right, well, can you get the kitchen up and running? I'll be there as soon as I can. I said, sure. So I started taking some of the things that I had in my other kitchen, let that team know. I had a great sous chef, Lenora, phenomenal sous chef. She was in the union, but she was my number two. So I kind of took over that kitchen, got them through the things. And he's like, hey, can you help cover placing orders, et cetera? Found that that place was a mess. There was stuff everywhere. Mind you, we got four deliveries a week. We were so big. Four deliveries. An entire truck came to our campus just to deliver to us. So you got deliveries Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday. Okay. There is no need when you get that many deliveries to have a ton of produce and certain fresh products. Produce cooler packed. So we worked through getting that down. And I don't know how many. It wasn't terribly long. It was maybe a month and a half. She came back. I said, okay, hey, I'm going back to my kitchen. I was actually kind of bored because that team had figured out how to keep things going when I had to be at the other building. And then it wasn't too much longer that, you know, the lights weren't on in the other kitchen because I came in at like 4:30 to make sure to receive bread. And lights weren't on. Normally they were on at that point. I walk over, keys are on the table, pictures are gone. I call them up, my food service director. I'm like, hey, she's... she's not coming back this time. And he goes, okay, can you take over the kitchen? Yep, I got it. Don't worry. Get in when you get in. I already know the drill. Took it over as if nothing happened. So at this point now, I'm managing two kitchens. Like full-blown, two kitchens, two teams, two schedules. The one has a bakery. We figure out a bakery schedule. Ton of work. Loved it. I was busy. People were like, man, look at him go. And same thing type of happened. You know, at that point, things were humming, but then my food service director had left. He needed a different opportunity. So he left, went to another university. And at this point, I wasn't the food service director. There really was no one like truly the food service director, even though I was running both buildings as kind of the chef manager. I didn't have the title. I did that for, about, I don't know, probably 6 months. And eventually Bill said, just take the FSD job. You don't have to wear a suit. You're already doing the job. So I put my name in the hat, take the FSD job. Now I have to go and look for chefs. Okay, this is the hardest thing in the world to do. Hiring, figuring out, it's one thing for staff, it's another thing for management, and especially a chef that needs to be able to execute at a high level. Went through some chefs, they came, worked what we did, they'd go, one had to move back to New York, et cetera, et cetera. Shit happens. This is towards the tail end of my time there. And I was basically the FSD of both buildings. I was the chef of both buildings. I was down an assistant food service director. So I'm trying to like cover front of house stuff. So I have all this work. I'm burning out. My fuse is burning quick. I asked for support. I asked for help. I get help like once every like 2 weeks. I said, I can't do this anymore. I can't keep doing this. And I start looking for something else. It's like, I'm not doing this anymore. I can't do it. So I'd reached, actually, the president of the next company I work for reached out and it said, hey, I see your profile. I see you're looking. It was on LinkedIn. You know, I'd love for you to put an application. So what do? I put in an application. I'm still working at Loyola. You know, got to pay the bills, figure out what I want to do. And it took about 3 months to get the position with the next food management company. It was like a rigor mortem. It was like, hey, we have something for you. And then it was, no, we don't. And then, hey, we got this. No, we don't. And then ultimately, again, life is full of stories, is that the final call, that third call was from one of the VP of ops. And he said, hey, we have a chef that's leaving. You know, I don't know if this is something you're interested in, but ultimately we want you to, you know, probably take over the account as the food service director. My wife basically sat in the background and she said, go tell him to F off. I was dying laughing, but I was miserable, we were wanting to get out of the city. And I said, I'm going to do it. So I did. and it was at Dominican University. So now I'm the chef at Dominican University, but like there were no systems in place. There was no menu management system. You know, I didn't even mention it. Loyola had helped work through like a whole online, their menu management system. I helped develop that. Hey, this works, this doesn't work. So I was part of a ton of guinea pig projects there. So when I went to Dominican, I didn't know what the hell was going on. I was so confused trying to figure out what to do. I had learned some really cool things from Excel. So I'm trying to put together like how to scale recipes and run this kitchen. Again, this is union too. So I can't just do whatever I want to do, going from one union account to another. And I'm trying to figure out what to do. And it wasn't even like a month later, the FSD was gone. And now I'm in charge of the entire building. Now I have to figure out how to run everything. Finance, HR, everything. At least Loyola had front of house support, or, you know, FSD support for a lot of that. And they handled a lot of the HR issues and things that, you know, I just didn't have to deal with. I was really, really focused on the back house, but I had to figure it out. And I did. So figured all of that out, finally got a chef on board, was humming. And we're not even like going into a year. I think it was 6 months that I did that. And then I had a chef for about 6 months. So we had just bought our house when I went to Dominican. And again, fate, things happen for a reason. That's what I believe in. The president of the company, he was showing another university around our university because it was the only university we had at the time. And they were looking for a chef to, I think, take that account that he was at. And he mentioned to me, I was down in the what's called the Cyber Cafe. I was running the coffee piece because we were short people. And actually, shout out to Ryan Babich. He was running the sandwich station because we were just short. So in the mornings, we would kind of run the cafe in the mornings. And then the afternoon, we were able to go back up and do kind of our normal thing. And he's like, you know, hey, we have that position open. You know, if you're interested, you know, it doesn't hurt to put your name in the hat. I was like, okay. Right? Like, sure. And as he's literally walking away, he literally turns around. He literally he's like, call me, think about it. And I said, okay. So what did I do? I put my name. I called my wife. Yeah, we were married at the time. Called my wife. I said, hey, what do you think about Indianapolis? And she says, why? And I was like, told her the opportunity, told her what was going on. She goes, screw it, let's do it. So ipso facto, take the job, move to the University of Indianapolis. Another giant shit show that I'm trying to figure out and take over. You know, I wanted something more because I had this kind of, I've always had these goals, these different things. You know, when I was at the casino, when I was going to corner school, you know, I was like, you know, by 35, I want to be an executive chef and I want to run my own place. That happens at 28. When that happens at 28, you know, by the time I'm at 29, I'm like, you know what? By 30, I don't want my wife to have to work because, you know, we're kids on the way. So I don't want her to have to work. I want to be financially free enough that she can stay home. That happens when I kind of get to this UIndy position, you know, around 30 years old. So now she doesn't have to work. And that was like a huge goal for me. So my job was to go in, save this place, get it in order. At the time, we had like 170 people on staff. It was absolutely the biggest elephant that I had to work through, trying to like chomp through. Well, that's what we do. Took all the learnings that I had, the systems that, you know, developed through all the few years, you know, the 3.5 years now, put that into place. And I'd never been in a position that I felt like I was at my quit point. Like I was at break point. This place was, it was difficult. It was tough. And I'll never forget, I was working salad bar. We were short, covering the salad bar. Now, this place was not union, so I had a lot more freedom to do what I needed to do whenever I needed to do it. I was working the salad bar, getting it set up for the day, and I have a random phone number pops up on my phone, and I answer it. And I say, this is Jeff. So I always answer the phone. I said, hey, this is Mike. I thought it was my Pepsi rep. Maybe he got a new phone number. And I was like, Pepsi Mike? And he's like, no, the owner. And I said, like, my heart sunk. I didn't know what to do. Because at this point, I was running, like, labor models and everything else. Because I was actually the GM at this point. Yeah, I should take a step back. I took over as the GM of the account. I never took over as the chef when I went there. I took over as the GM of the account. Okay, so I get that phone call, and it's like, what are the numbers going to look like? We're losing money. I need to know what it's going to be like. And for context, like, this account was like half a mil in the hole. Like, it was not pretty by any stretch of the imagination. And I said, you know, we're taking it day by day. You know, I've only been here, I've only been there like 3 months, something like that. Cause it was like December when I got there, January 1, something like that. And this was like April, May. No, it was March, April. Yeah. Somewhere in March, April. And I took it for like 30 minutes, like just trying to justify what we're doing. And something snapped inside of me. Like, I just snapped. And I was like, you know what? I didn't move here to fail. I mean, I had other choice words. I didn't move here to fail. I know what I'm doing. Give me time to get things in order. And that was all he needed. He said, okay, sure. That's what I need to hear. And that was the end of the conversation. We got things. We did. We got things routed. You know, when I wrote the budget for the following year, because the year I came in, it was not my budget. The following year that I wrote that budget, we were at like this massive half mil. It was like, I don't know what we end up losing compared to what the budget was supposed to be, right? For context. I said, we're going to make $100,000. Like, that was my, I did my projections. I had my labor in order. We went through like mass cuts, everything. And I was like, yeah, this is what's going to happen. We're going to make $100,000. And they're like, I can't present this to the board, right? So we had like a food committee board, different people from the university that ran, that were kind of the connector. And I was like, okay, well, say we're going to break even. Like, that's a win. So it was like, we put like $1,000 win on the P&L, like the one we submitted to the school. But in reality, I was like, we're going to make a lot of money. If so facto, we get through that year, we made over $200,000 compared to the budget. I was like, $250,000. I was ecstatic. I was like, we did it. Like that's what I was here to do, and never felt so good like achieving something like that. And at that point I had done a lot of self-development, self like reflection, things like that. And I was trying to be humble, but like, cause I don't celebrate my wins enough like I should, but you know, I got awarded a thing at the company thing, whatever. And I was on cloud nine, but it was like, okay, I got this account where it needs to be. We're making money. Things are humming. Things are good. What do I do now? Right. My goal system was like, okay, I need something new. I it's very hard for me to sit in one place because I get very complacent when there's not something to fix. When things are just going along and it's status quo, I have a very hard time staying with that. So it was kind of like talking with the VP at the time, and it was like, well, you can really go into the DM route, you know, as we build this market, or it's going to be, you know, maybe some sort of corporate role that we're going to develop, but we don't know. So I started helping out some of the other accounts that we picked up in that area, and it was fine. And managing managers is even a higher thing at that level. And I just sat and I was like, I don't think this is for me. I don't think I can become a DM. And I'll never forget, a lot of people that are like, you know what DM stands for, right? Dumb move. And I am so glad I never took on a DM role, because I saw the headaches that a lot of them went into with all their accounts. All that to say, they ended up with a corporate position, and I was like, all right, I'm in. However, I had to move back to Chicago. So I'm in Indy. Now I got to move back to Chicago. And I was like, I can do this from here. Let me do it from here. They're like, no. So this is 2020. Okay. Put our house up on the market, gets sold, pandemic hits. Shit. Luckily, the buyer stayed. We get moved back to Illinois. We live with my in-laws for like a month before we find our place. Working remote anyways. I don't go in the office. No one can go in the office. And the role really ended up being like more of a purchasing role, right? So even though it was like culinary director or whatever, senior culinary director, it was really purchasing is what I did. So I had to learn purchasing during COVID. That was crazy. Right. I had already developed relationships at the operational level with drivers and different reps from different companies that we bought from, et cetera. So I really had always developed relationships there, but now I had to develop relationships for a whole company. And it was easier than I thought for me, because I had always treated people with respect. And so that translated to working with all these other folks that were with these companies, distribution, et cetera. So I learned I learned purchasing during COVID, wrote some things to help me, ended up deploying them to the field, ended up being a great success, wrote some menus, awesome stuff. It was again, a trialing time, but we made it through. And on the other side, you know, it was just like, there was just so many things to do. So I was never really bored per se. My goals had turned into like, hey, by 40, I want to be financially free. What does this look like? Trying to work through it. And then there was a point where a VP role had opened up. We had somebody else on the team and some crazy internal stuff happened. And I get a call and it was like, hey, we are going to move this other person into this role. Are you okay with that? And deep down, I think I wasn't okay with it. Like I was like, oh yeah, I'm perfectly fine. As long as I get to do what I get to do, I'm compensated appropriately. I'm good with that. And even after I got off that phone call and said I was okay, I think deep down I wasn't. I think that I wanted that title. I wanted to be that person. I'd worked so hard. Retrospect, looking back, I'm so glad I never did it. I'm so glad I never took that position, because VP to me just means you're marrying that company. You are on the hook for everything. And yeah, I stayed in the role I was in, doing kind of what I was doing, doing the purchasing stuff. We were humming along, having fun. And then again, like anything else, it just became a lot of spreadsheets, a lot of contract work, like looking at, I call it like my spaceship. I had like 6 screens up or 5 screens up and constantly looking at spreadsheets and contracts and trying to save money. And there was the creative side kind of had gone for me. So I ultimately like started up doing this podcast. I said, I need a creative outlet. I need to talk to people. So I started doing this and doing a little bit of video work, you know, on my off hours. And yeah, I think that was the start of the end. You know, I started getting pulled off. Well, take a step back. I got asked, you know, do you want to continue doing this purchasing thing? And I said, no, like, no, I have no enjoyment doing this. And they're like, that's what we thought. So, you know, it was going to be more of a culinary role, et cetera, but it was just more paperwork and not fun stuff. We were doing some catering stuff, which is cool here and there, but it was a lot of headache, a lot of work. Anyways, I started getting pulled off jobs and it was just like, oh boy, what's happening? What's going on? And then get the random, hey, we got an HR call coming up on Tuesday. Okay. And then it was, hey, your position's being eliminated. All right. You know, so many mixed emotions. What do I do? Had 2 kids at that time, little kids. I don't know what I'm going to do. So trying to figure that out, took it like it is what it is, right? You're eliminating my role. What can I do? Nothing, right? It is what it is. So before I move on to kind of like what happens there, you know, kind of the lessons through my time at that management company was building relationships, super important, because the food industry is the biggest, smallest, biggest industry, and you're only 6 degrees separation from somebody. And yeah, lead by example. People want to know that you work hard, but you also have to say no. You have to learn to say no, because everybody wanted everything all the time. And you just get so bogged down in just emails and doing things that people should do for themselves. So learning to say no, building relationships, and leading by example, you know, 3 really big lessons there. Okay. So what am I going to do? Right. I can go jump back in, get another job somewhere. Probably wouldn't have been that hard. Make a couple phone calls, whatever. And I said, you know what? Maybe I want to just try this thing on my own for a little while. Like, I didn't want to jump right back into it. I just didn't. I just wasn't in the right mindset. I don't want to just jump back into doing the same thing that I've been doing and go through the whole rigmarole learning a company, et cetera. So kind of doing little bits and pieces on the side, making a little bit of money here and there, nothing significant, have a little bit of money saved up just to get by. And then it gets to a point where it's like, hey, we're not going to have enough money to get by. So we decide to sell our house, sold it. Pretty quickly, it was like that summer. This was like April when this happened. And then by the summer, we decided to sell our house, sold our house, moved a little closer to the studio that I worked out of. And just rented. Had enough of a nest egg that we could survive. I'm trying to make consulting work, trying to figure out odd jobs, pick up a couple clients here, there. Nothing of any significance, to be honest. Kept doing the podcast. Did get to a point where I had pushed it so hard in the beginning and wanted to make it work so bad and didn't realize how hard it is to do a podcast and how hard it is to the background stuff, the editing and getting it done and getting it published in shorts. And yes, you can do it the easy way and just half-ass it, but it just doesn't look as good, doesn't sound as professional. And I want it to be something really, really good. So I kind of had stopped and it was like, well, if I get a guest and I talk, great. If I don't, whatever. And there'd be times where it'd be a month and nothing would come in and where I wouldn't talk to anybody. And, you know, I kind of got reinvigorated towards the end of last year, going into this year. You know, some things that started going my way, started picking up some more clients, some more contracts came in. And I was like, you know what? I need to push this. I built something. I've stuck with it long enough. Most people don't make it past 5 episodes, 10 episodes. I'd already done 20, 30, something like that. Maybe I was in my high 30s. I don't know. So I made a commitment. I was like, you know, I'm going to do this. I am going to do this come hell or high water. And I did. I started pushing through it. And this year, you know, we're now going into February. Got some great guests lined up. Got some really cool things on the horizon. The consulting is still going. And that's kind of where we're at today, is doing consulting on the side. And to be honest, like I've told people, I'm like, you know, I'm still figuring out what it is that I'm doing, what I want to do, right? Ultimately, yeah, the podcast, I absolutely love doing this. And this is what I want to make more of, how I make a living, but it takes time. We're 2 years in and it's just, it takes time. Finally hitting in the charts, which is great, but that doesn't mean anything, right? It's like, any, you know, you could have all the fame and glory, but if it doesn't lead to contracts or sponsorships or anything of that nature, what does it matter, right? It's just a hobby still. So really rebuilding things to where it can be an actual source of revenue. That's what we're building towards now. Now on the consulting side, got some things working with some recipe development, got a few projects out there, but do everything now from consulting on the side to of K-12 recipe development, operational excellence, right? Operations is my bread and butter. So I know operations inside and out, how they should run, handling of people, et cetera. But the big lesson right now, right, ending on this, is running a company, owning a company, it's a lot of work. They never tell you how much work it's going to be, because you put on the HR hat. And when I mean HR, it's like you are VP of HR, you are VP of finance. You have to figure out all those things, how things flow. Thank God for AI. I will say that. And some people will say, oh, you can't use AI. You should get a lawyer. You should get an accountant. I don't have the money for that. So I'm going to do everything I can to use what's at my fingertips, verify what's said, and make it work. And that's what I've done, is use all those systems to help build what I've got going on now and continuing to grow. So if you want to start a business, you better have the balls to stick to it, because it is not easy. No. It is one of the hardest things you can do. And I think so many people get stuck in having a job, because I was there, the golden handcuffs. It's easy. It's simple. You show up, you get paid, you got health coverage. You can live your life fine and dandy, however it is that you want. You climb the ladder. But I found that even at the top of the ladder, you can get cut at the snap finger. It doesn't matter. And that's some of the hardest thing to realize, is that you're still a number in a company. And there's some great companies out there. There's some chefs and people that I know in the industry that love their jobs. They've been doing it for 40 years, whatever it is. Not for me. Like, I don't think I could go back. And do I want to go back? No. If it came to that, would I? Absolutely. But I really want to stick this thing out. I want to make it happen and keep blowing through it. Whew. That was a lot. That was a lot on my chest. And there was so many bullet points that I'm looking through here that haven't even touched on, but I think I blabbered for almost an hour now to tell my story, to tell my truth. There'll be bits and pieces that'll come up and stories that I'll remember, and I'm sure I'll tell them here or there, but I wanted this to be the episode that reintroduces who I am, what I've gone through, what I'm working on. And yeah, that's all I had to say on this one. Thank you. If you're listening to this one, if you made it this far, I appreciate you listening to my life work story. It's been fun to share. I was scared as shit to do something like this. I can't tell you how much I put this off and trying to be like, okay, getting cameras right, blah, blah, blah. I just didn't want to do it. I was so scared to just, I'm talking to a camera. It's just, you're not talking to anybody. There's no questions to ask. You're just focused on one camera. Step outside your comfort zone. Just do it. What's it matter? Who cares? Somebody doesn't like this. They're going to turn it off and not listen to it. I don't give a shit. What does it matter? At the end of the day, what does it matter? It's all about you, what you want to succeed in. And if you want it bad enough, you'll get it. Just do it. Just do it, right? The good old Nike saying, just do it, right? You miss 100% of the shots you don't take. So that's what we're doing. We're doing it. We're making it. It's going to be an awesome year. 2026 is going to be a phenomenal year for the Felon Food brand, the podcast, everything that has to come with it. If you want information about me, what's going on, got the website revamped, felonintofood.com. Check us out on Instagram at either felonintofood or Chef Jeff Fell. LinkedIn, same thing. You find me, Jeff Fell. Felon the Food has a page as well. Try to kind of do more podcasting on that one than the regular name. All the other platforms, it's exactly the same. Chef Jeff Fell or Felon the Food. Feel free. Thanks, everyone. I appreciate you taking the time to listen, hear me out, what I had to say. And as we always end things, until next time, catch you on the sunny side. HospitalityChain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, HospitalityChain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.